You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, we want to bring to you a homestead update. So it's going to be a fairly quick podcast because we only have a few things to talk about as far as a homestead update. And quite honestly, today's going to be a little bit of humble pie. So we're going to talk about some challenges we're dealing with right now.
They're not mistakes. They're happy accidents.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Let's call it that.
Bob Ross. I'm using the Bob Ross homesteading method.
Yeah. So we'll bring you some of those updates here in just a minute. Before we get started on that, as far as homestead update, we want to talk about a few things that are in the works. They're exciting and good. The first thing, why don't we talk about TPH community?
Okay. Well, we're starting to build our community membership site. We have some PDFs in there. We're getting more and more content.
Yeah.
You know, we're working on a daily basis trying to add content.
There's some discounts in there.
Yeah, discounts. We have a forum where not only are we putting information, but then the people who are in there now are adding.
Essentially, right now, we have what it is a test group. So we have some people in there that wanted to be part of this test group, and they're, you know, we're working out some of the little kinks, the functionality, and we're adding content.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. What we see this community becoming is almost like a mastermind area. So where people can not only get great value from the discounts, from the PDFs,
from the videos,
from the exclusive videos that we're putting on there. Eventually there'll be some courses or mm-hmm. things like that. But a place where you can bounce off information off, quite frankly, serious-minded people.
Yeah, people who are out there actually doing it, setting their own goals and working every day to achieve them.
So. Yeah, and I'll tell you this. If you like this podcast, if you want to help support us, join the community. Even if you don't plan on being, you know, heavily involved, that's fine. It helps. You know, and it's not, we're not asking for a donation because there's very good value in there. In fact, it's mm-hmm. excellent value. And right now it's what, $27.50?
Yeah, it's $27.50
for an entire year. Eventually that will go up to $55, and that's it. $55 a year, continually adding new content. As far as videos and downloads and eventually courses or and discounts on courses and different products and things that we're working towards right now. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
And it would really help our family continue doing what we love doing,
just, you know,
podcasting
others.
And educating other people.
Right.
Just making ends meet. You know, we still have 5 kids at home. So.
Okay. The other thing that we've been working on is some ebooks. Right, so we've got not only a couple of ebooks on goal setting. You can get this on our website, thepreparedhomestead.org.
In our store, just click on store.
Right, and more are coming. We're working on more as well, and they're very helpful. We've gotten good feedback for those that have read them, and they're extremely helpful. We think we're hitting a missing area. Among homesteaders, among small hobby-type farmers, among preparedness-minded people, and that is the planning aspect, and, you know, not just the skills, hands-on educational stuff.
Which is important, too, but
of course, yeah.
Actually, you know, practically setting goals or preparing to homestead, and every single one of our ebooks includes a workbook section with printable pages so that you can work on a daily basis through the workbook and, you know, really get your goals and objectives in order, and then work through plans, work through projects, because we're going to have an entire section on project planning that allows you to use these worksheets to learn how to do it instead of having to go through and get a master's degree in management or something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So some very helpful things there. Let's see. We got workshops coming up. Our next one is March 12th. And that's going to be essentially, water strategies for the homestead.
So if you have too much water or too little water, or you want to make sure you don't have too much or too little water.
Right. Yeah, water strategies help moderate things like flood and drought. So very important, extremely important. And we have a few more coming up in April. Again, those are all on our website. And to see beyond that, just looking kind of closely, say May, we've got a couple expos coming up. First one is the Northwest Preparedness Expo.
And that's in Spokane, right?
No, that's in Prosser.
Oh, Prosser, okay.
Prosser, that's the 7th.
Okay, and you're giving
two talks. Presentations, one on permaculture for preparedness, another one on principles of personal defense. So that should be pretty cool. And
we will have a booth there too, and we'll have some of our things available. And you know, we'd just love to meet people and talk with you. So if you listen to our podcast and
you happen to be in that area or
you want to go to that expo,
yeah, it should be good. There's a lot of good speakers mm-hmm. lined up, so it should be good. And then a week later. On the 15th, so May 15th, is the Sustainable Preparedness Expo. That one is in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
And so I'll be giving a presentation there as well. And we will also have a booth.
Yep.
So we have those things coming up. And then let's get into a homestead update. And the first one is we got our first batch of meat birds in.
For this year.
And We decided based on the analysis that we did of last year, decided to go with Cornish Cross this year.
Right, because last year we got heritage breeds and they take a long time to grow out and they really don't get
that big. Yeah, because you know we're trying to make it. Of course, we're supplementing them with feed, but we were trying to make it more of a grass-based system, at least for supplementation. And it just took a long time.
Yeah.
It took a long time to grow them out.
Well, I think they're smarter than the Cornish Cross and, yeah. and really intended to be a little bit more independent. And that was great. And they didn't drown the first time we put them near water like the Cornish Cross tend
to
do.
So, yeah, that's a piece of our humble pie right now is that we didn't prepare as well as we should have for the receival of our chicks, especially Cornish Cross.
Yeah, they're sensitive and tender.
Yeah. So let's see, some analysis. We ordered 100 of them. You know, all hatcheries send more than what you order because
they know
inevitably a couple are going to die and they don't want to have to resend them out, et cetera. So they sent actually 109. Okay, that's quite a bit over, but that's probably pretty typical for hatchery. And so they sent us 109 and we didn't really have the brooder set. I mean, it's still pretty cold here. We have a brooder set. And so we set it up real quick, got it going, put the birds in, but it was cold. We should have started it hours and hours before to warm up the bedding.
Or the day before or something because those poor little guys. You know, it's in our garage. So our garage
is 40 degrees
compared to outside. Yeah, it was almost 50 now because it's been so warm. But that's not warm enough for the chicks.
Well, right. So, yeah, they obviously want something more like 90 degrees.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, we have heat lamps. And so we got them going, but we gave them too much space right off the bat. So, and a few of them died almost immediately.
Yeah.
So the lesson learned there was that to give them a smaller space that's warmer.
Prepare the brooder in advance.
Because they ran away from the heat. They hadn't figured out, and as soon as we realized that they were having problems, we lost some, even though we tried to get them. So we lost some. Okay, so that was the first mistake is giving them too much room. So now we have them for a week. We could start expanding their space, and that would be fine because, well, they're doing better now and all that. The second mistake we made is we put in water, of course, almost right away, but we didn't supervise them enough. We used a kind of a standard chick water, and a few of them immediately just went and laid in it and died.
Yeah.
I mean, so they will try and drown themselves almost every time. So, again, a little more supervision and maybe even just periodic access, under a little bit of supervision with these guys to get this good start.
Yeah, and we did put a couple of blocks under the water. That way they really had, because they weren't figuring things out, they basically had to lift their heads up a little to get the water rather than be able to just step into the water.
Yeah, so I would say that we've lost probably 15, which we don't like that number. That's too much. And so, you know, we're going to tighten that up for next time. So, again, our lessons learned there. Don't give them as much space in the beginning. I mean, they're tiny little chicks. So you can get 100 of them in a small space.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they all bunch up together anyway.
Right.
You want to give them enough space where they're not going to trample each other, but not so much space they're going to run out of the heat and then just die.
Right.
Because that's what they'll do.
Yeah. And I mean, our subsequent ones that we're going to order are going to be done in warmer weather too. And that will help.
Yeah, that will help. And we'll have it prepped and ready to go. And
because our goal, our plan is to do 2 or 3 runs this year of Cornish Cross.
Yeah. So some of these we'll be selling, but just even for our family alone, we want at least 150
to 200
meat birds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next thing is that we received some wiener pigs. Again, we have certain animal systems that we, what we call perennial, meaning they can continue on their own, i.e. we have a buck with our rabbits and our goats so that they can, you know, continue. Obviously, we have roosters as well, so we could hatch out eggs for our layers if we needed to. But our annual systems, you know, meat birds, for poultry and then pigs. That's just what we do. So we will get wiener pigs at the beginning of the season, grow them out, and then have them processed in fall. So this year we decided to go with some more pigs. Last year we did 2. This year we're doing 5. Now one to two of those are for customers.
And we are open for other people purchasing that last.
Yeah,
we're keeping 2 for ourselves.
Essentially, yeah. Essentially, we have one for sale, whether it's half pig or a whole pig.
So if you're interested and you live in our area.
Yeah, for sure. One is for trade. We're going to trade pork for beef, pound for pound. And that's, you know, both of us using a grass-based system, or I should say a pasture/forested system. The beef will be on grass, and the pigs will have lots of room. We don't raise them in pig pens.
No.
We do paddock shifting, so they have lots of access.
And the feed they do get is non-GMO.
Yeah. So, and you know, so we're getting like for like as far as quality in the meat. This year, what we're going to do is we've got a pen that they're in now while they're little, and once they, you know, they grow a little bit, then they'll go out, and we have 3 paddocks, sizable paddocks. These are probably half-acre paddocks, and we're going to rotate them through what will probably be those 3 paddocks.
And they're kind of forested. I mean, we cleared in there, not fully cleared, but the pigs last year went through and started digging up roots and doing that whole area up and finding good things in the ground. And so this isn't like an open, they get their forest time.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, well, they're happy pigs for sure.
Yeah. And they're cleaner. They're so much cleaner, and they don't stink.
Yeah. In fact, last year we had the processor. We processed all of our own animals except for the pigs, which we're talking about doing something different this year. But last year we had the processor come out just for them. So they do basically a field dress and then take them back to the custom processor. And he's like, wow, these are the cleanest pigs I have seen in a long time. Not meaning like, you know, they don't have any dirt on them, meaning the area wasn't filled in feces.
And they weren't covered in feces
and
mud. I mean, they really were clean looking.
Healthy looking, good looking as far as organs, all that kind of stuff. So that's a testament to the system itself.
Yep.
So that's our pig plan, if you will. And then, so what's next?
Well, starts. We did get some starts going.
Okay.
Because our growing season here is short, and particularly for things like tomatoes and peppers.
Yes.
We have to start them early if we want to get any kind of good fruiting
going on. Right. So we got a good jump this year. So far, we've got, 150 starts or so, mm-hmm. more to come. And several different types of tomatoes and peppers. And what else did we get started?
Some flowers. Onion.
Yeah, a couple other things. We also started a little bit of a nursery. So we're doing some tree, growing some trees from seed. So once those get going, we can talk more about that. Our goal is also to have a little bit of a nursery, our own nursery. Mm-hmm. So we're getting into plant propagation a lot this year.
And we're also going to be moving our chickens out of the greenhouse.
Yes.
So that will be our tomato and pepper.
Yeah, I can't wait to get in there and dig that stuff up. And I know we're going to find tons of earthworms.
There will be a lot of worms. There will be a lot of really good soil. I know there will be underneath that.
Yes.
And those layers.
We're confident that the soil temperature there is already much higher than it is outside.
Yeah, they've been living under chickens.
Yeah, and deep bedding.
Deep bedding.
So that's going to be cool to watch.
Yeah.
We have, this is a really good one. We're doing a lot of, just education, just community type education, taking different courses from other people. And this is important. This is really important because we have to have a philosophy, which is ours, of lifelong learning.
Yeah.
So we're continuously learning. And it doesn't even matter if you feel comfortable in a subject, there's always more to learn.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the people that keep ahead of everything are the ones that go, well, even though I think I know all this, somebody's going to give me some new information. Sometimes you can go to a class and the whole class is just repeat of what you know, except one thing. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah,
that was great information. And you walk away going, that was worth it.
And of course, it's also a great place to network.
Yes, it is. Well, and for us, this environment is a different, our climate is completely different than anything we've ever experienced before.
Right. In fact, a gardening class that we're taking right now, a lot of people in there are very experienced gardeners.
Yeah.
North Idaho climate is new to me.
Right. They're coming from California or Arizona.
Yeah.
Where, you've got warmth and sunshine almost all
right.
the time.
So, I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, it shows, there's humility there. And they realize, as we do, that we always have more to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And for us, we're meeting a lot of people who have gardened here for 30 years.
Which is a great resource.
It really is, because they can see the patterns over time and go, well, this one year we had this strange fluke. Like last year, all of them were saying, I don't remember it ever being that dry.
Right.
That's so dry and so hot last year. And so it was completely changed the way they had to garden. And, we see a lot of people sharing that information. Like, this is what I did, and this is how we solved this problem. And talking about the different predators who want to come in and eat all your food. The gophers and the moose and deer.
Yeah, and the voles and all the rest. In a northern climate, especially in a mountainous region, the idea of microclimate is even more important. I mean, it's important everywhere, but you have to understand that in a mountainous environment especially, your climate could be drastically different from somebody a half mile down the road.
Yeah, and ours is.
It is.
I mean, we look at, some of our neighbors that are literally like a mile from us. Doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal. But our microclimates, even on our own property, we have microclimates that are so varied. But, some people have a much later frost, and some people, their frost hits weeks before ours does.
Right, right. We happen to be in a good spot. It's not, what you would call a frost pocket, although there's certainly colder areas mm-hmm. on our property and warmer areas and drier and wetter. We're not generally in a frost pocket like in a valley where all the cold air sinks where their last frost will be later than ours.
Yeah. And their first frost is soon. I mean, some people we've talked to have the growing seasons we thought ours were short.
Right.
Even shorter.
Right. So if you, in other words, you can start with the USDA zones, hardiness zones. Mm-hmm. And if you just took that, we're in what's called a 6A. But you know, that's the baseline. That's where you can start with that, but you have to really take into account your specific property. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why it's vital, because most people around us are like, oh yeah, it says 6A, but we're not. We're more like a 5.
Mm-hmm.
And even in some places around here, in just within 20 or 30 miles, might be a 4.
Yeah.
It's that drastic of a difference. So it's important to understand those things. Where we are probably really is a 6A.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't plan for a 6A. We plan to be more resilient than that. So we, in fact, in the vast majority of cases, we're not going to plant trees, for example, that are hardy down to a 6. We're looking for cultivars that are down to a 5 or a 4, even better, a 4 or a 3. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't want to plant right up to your hardiness zone, because there's always going to be those years that exceed the normal.
Right.
Okay, and so your USDA hardiness zones are based on low temperatures. Okay, it's all based on low temperatures, which, you know, equates to frost. So that's important.
So this is one of the reasons why going to these classes and getting educated and learning what other people have done and what they're doing that's working, ways that we can, you know, we've studied season extension, but we've actually now gone to 2 different talks on season extenders and what methods they use out here, and have gleaned a little bit of information, bit more, and expanded our knowledge. And that also allows us that when we go and we do land analysis and design for clients, that we can, you know, look at their area and try and come up with creative ideas to help them that are beyond something that maybe they've even read before.
Right, because pretty much everybody in the colder climates is looking for season extension.
Right.
I mean, it's just the nature of a short growing season.
Right.
So it's really important. It's something that we're trying to basically become specialists in. So that's why we're putting so much emphasis on it. And obviously we're using season extenders here on our own property.
Right. And we're learning cultivars that grow well in our climate. You know, even seed suppliers that provide seeds that have been grown in cold climates that have adapted well to here, rather than getting stuff from Florida where, you know, you might not be able to grow something like that. And so,
And
we're taking an interesting class on bees too.
Yes. Yeah. And that's really cool. It's something we want to get into. We just weren't ready to go for it last year. I mean, we step out and go for it all the time.
Yeah.
We really do. And it's just, you know, it's
sometimes
not something
too
we're
much.
Not exactly. Sometimes too much, but for something like bees, we wanted to have a little bit more basis on that.
Yeah.
We didn't want to just not only spend the money to get established, but then they die and like, we had no idea how to
maybe
support
we should have done this or that.
It's like, well, we always want to go the natural way and just let them go on their own.
Right.
Which is good, but they do require some support.
Yeah. So this class has been good, and this is a 3-week class, and we're going to learn at least the basics of beekeeping that will give us, again, a foundation that we can kind of jump off of and do some self-education and maybe even join a little bee club or something.
Right, because, I mean, we really want to add that aspect to our homestead.
Yes.
There's so many benefits to bees. You know, obviously there's the honey, which is what most people think of right off the bat, and we would love that.
Yeah.
But all the pollination
that
they provide with all the stuff we have planted out here, one, we can provide the right environment, the right amount of forage. In fact, they could probably not a lot of hives, but maybe a couple hives could forage probably off just our property. But, you know, you have to take all these things into consideration. You know, what do you have around you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have the amount of forage you need, well, bees can forage up to, 3 miles or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So that's been good. And so we'll continue with that. And then, we have to talk about our pond
pond.
This is another piece of humble pie.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I don't know that it's so much humble pie as it is an educational experience. Because last year, when we dug the pond, we got no more rain.
Right.
We had nothing filling up our pond in order for us to test the dam wall, to test the, you know, make sure there's no seepage. We had no way.
Right. So
we had to wait.
We had to wait, and that's, you know, it's fine. We expected we might have to make some tweaks to it. We just weren't expecting there to be a big hole in the dam wall. Right. But so, you know, we when we dug the pond, we studied this, and you know, we did it ourselves, and we dug a keyway and we packed it and then built the dam wall and thought we did everything right, but we obviously didn't. So we're going to fix it. It's, mm-hmm. And it's not a huge problem.
Right.
It's going to be a pretty easy fix, actually. But we, you know, we had some erosion in one area that we're going to have to shore up and fix
get some clay.
Yeah, we're going to get some bentonite and do, because we thought we did with the initial analysis, we thought there was going to be more clay content. There wasn't, which is fine.
Again, this goes back to how different different places in your property can be.
Yeah, yeah.
Some places we have high clay, other places we have high sand. So
right. So that's okay. I mean, we're definitely learning a lot from it. In fact, we're plan is to dig some more ponds this year and clear some areas. So we'll do a better job this time and hopefully get it right the first time.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it's every single time you do something, you learn.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good.
So it's not mistakes. It's happy accidents.
Yeah. It's happy accidents for sure. Okay. I think that probably does it for our homestead update. Can you think of anything else? That's pretty much it. I mean, we're going. We're busy.
We are. We're writing. We're doing videos. We're taking classes. We're giving workshops. We're going to be at expos and giving talks.
It's a good time. Yeah. Good time. All right. That's it. Our verse for today comes from Proverbs chapter 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous man runs into it and is safe. And our shout out today goes to Jeremiah in Alaska. Thanks for listening.